So, are we ready?
I think so.
Ready? All right,
we're ready.
Let's do this.
Let's do it.
Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to Pork Therapy. Thank you so much for joining us again.
This is Mike.
We don't know why you keep coming back, but you do.
And the reason you keep coming back is because that's Stephanie.
That's right. I think they come back for
you, Mike.
And speaking of pork therapy, this is a prickly subject.
Oh, this is very, yes,
very
starting off on a good
note.
It's
a pricky subject and a prickly subject.
Oh, indeed.
This is just, you know it's going to be a good podcast when it starts off.
You know what, we have a very special
just waiting till halfway.
We have a very special episode today. Because we have two guests.
Oh, it actually is. And since Mike said it, I'm not going to get my...
It's special. When do we have two guests?
I'm not going to get my head chopped off, but that might be sort of the topic. We haven't really wasted enough time yet, but
yeah. Well, let's do some.
Hell, our email's broken. Our feed is broken, so we can't even give out any
information. Actually, our email's now working. We've just learned that our email has not been working for like a month. So
yeah,
thanks to everyone who probably
just thought nobody was listening to the show. Yeah. We said, all right, well,
we're making it anyway. How about that?
But it turned out that our email was having some technical difficulties. So you should. That was why Mike was getting no date requests. Mike, don't you feel vindicated?
No.
Anyway. So
well,
if you want to,
just for fun, you want to tell the audience where we are.
Oh well, we are at a Liberty event, aren't we?
Yes. Why you sound so furtive and mysterious at a Liberty event?
Well, and the lights keep dimming on.
Oh
off,
yeah,
we are making it sound exclusive and cool because all the cool people are here. We're actually at our regional meetup, and we're all part of the Free State Project here in New Hampshire. And occasionally, we like to get together and have a little bit of social time and bond with each other. And
this
you know,
one is called Liberty Tuesdays,
Liberty Tuesday,
we eat
right.
and joke.
And
eat, drink, and joke.
Eat, drink, and be merry.
And be merry.
And puns.
Oh, yes, puns.
Exactly.
Puns.
We don't get burgers with buns. We get burgers with puns.
Oh, they're better than that one. So we do have two guests.
Not as bad as the
Can you guys
prick,
introduce
right?
yourselves?
Yes, my name is Rich.
Lori.
And Lori. Okay, so...
And you know us, right?
Yes.
We're the ones who do all the talking. We don't have to introduce ourselves. So what are we talking about tonight, Rich, Lori, and Mike?
Well, I didn't want to mention it, but...
But?
But
what?
Well,
what?
It is a
this
prickly,
is so mysterious.
It is a prickly subject.
we are talking... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say...
I can interrupt Mike, but I can't interrupt our guest.
No, feel free, seriously. We were just having an interesting discussion this evening at the Liberty event about circumcision.
That's right. And so what were we talking about in particular about circumcision?
Well, it all started when Lori told me about her sister, who has this weird idea in her head that she wants her son to... be circumcised. And
her son's 24 years old. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Well, and,
how old is her son, by the way?
Is he born yet?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So he's still a bun in the oven.
A bun in the oven. And, you know, I've been looking into all kinds of different baby information so that if and when I have a baby, I'll, you know, be prepared. And... it seems like all of the information on the, you know, pro-circumcision versus no-circumcision, it all contradicts each other. They're both saying, oh, it does reduce the risk of STDs, and then, no, it doesn't reduce the risk of STDs, and...
Well, we have a good authority on that here on the show tonight, so we'll talk about that a little bit.
There's no such thing as authority.
Well,
you were talking about Rich.
No, I was talking about you. But you also have stuff to say because this is why are you a qualified
pet issue?
I am what is known as an intactivist. That's a
That's
word that was coined by an intactivist, and it basically is a combination of intact as opposed to not mutilated, not separated from the rest of the body, etc., and activist. So I've been at it since 1990. I've attended several international symposia on that subject, as well as conferences and marches and rallies.
There are conferences and marches. This
yeah,
is pretty serious.
I used to be the editor of a newsletter, an international newsletter that I put out approximately once every 2 or 3 weeks or so. And originally I called it the No Circ of Japan newsletter because I was living in Japan at the time, but then I called it the Guardian Angel after my family name.
Oh,
Angel.
I see.
But at least it Of course.
Well, you have credentials. That's very good.
Yeah.
You have penis cred.
Yes. Yeah, right.
You're no stranger to the smegma as well.
Yeah.
Oh, that was terrible.
Yeah,
I was going to say nobody's going to dick around with you.
Yeah. The ironic thing is that when I was my name is Richard, as you all know. When I was young, my parents had no idea that dick would be taking on a phallic connotation as I was growing up. And by the time I was in second grade, the teasing was merciless, and I ended up having it changed. Or so I thought. I didn't realize that my name was Richard all along because nobody ever called me
So what
Richard.
Does this have to do with circumcision?
Well, if I hadn't
yes.
changed my name, I would probably be known as the Dick Angel.
I see. Well, that was very good.
I do have one comment about your definition earlier of intactivist. You said one who's not separated from any part of his body, or at least that's
well,
part
that,
of it.
Yeah.
But what if someone simply had an arm amputated? Could they not be an activist?
Sure they could.
Oh, could they be an intactivist?
Well, technically, yes, but that wouldn't be what...
Right.
They wouldn't
a
have
specific
the same,
body part.
Exactly.
Not any. Okay.
Right. Speaking of a specific body part, we're not talking about vestigial or... extra or redundant tissue. We're talking about highly specialized tissue with very very specific functions, and is highly erogenous.
Well, all right, we can get into those things a little bit later, but I think maybe the question was what are the pros and cons, right?
And
yeah.
Well, there are no legitimate pros, but go on.
Right, and also with something that is as you know, circumcision is pretty mainstream in the U.S. I think the U.S. has the highest percentage of circumcised babies.
That is to say, the highest percentage for non-medical or non-medical or non-religious reasons. It's basically become a custom. It started in the 1880s as a means of preventing masturbation, which at the time was thought to be this horrible practice that caused everything from epilepsy to hairy palms.
Well, it does, doesn't it? My palms are pretty hairy.
So circumcision is about as legitimate as a marriage license.
Yeah. You might say that.
Which is not legitimate at all, see our previous episode.
Yes.
Right.
So what were you saying, Lori?
Well, I guess for me, it's, you know, I don't believe that circumcision is necessary or is really moral, and I'm not quite sure how to talk about such an emotionally charged topic with my sister, who has read the mainstream research and thinks, you know, based on that research, quote unquote, that that it is it's a good decision to make.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about persuasion tactics,
right.
Basically.
So based on our venue and our having 18 minutes left in the show maximum, let's keep the show to the topic of how to convince others that it's not.
Well, we're just how to talk about
how
it.
How to talk about it.
How to talk about it.
And you have must have experience with it.
Well, so, Lori, actually, I wanted to get back to one thing that you said, which was you said you're not sure if it's moral. Can you expound on that? Why do you think it might not be moral?
Well, I think removing any part of another person's body is a decision they should make for themselves, regardless of the health implications. For me, it's simply a matter of, you know, just fundamental... that's not yours to remove. And something I personally am very nervous about surgical procedures in general, unless they're necessary. And so it's kind
of... I'm still nervous.
Yeah. The fact that this elective procedure is so common and it doesn't seem to have any valid purpose and actually causes detriment.
And it should be pointed out that the victim, as it were, of this operation is not even consenting to it.
Exactly.
Right. At all.
Yeah, so for
and
me...
And can't consent because they can't even talk.
Unless he's 24 years old.
Understand what's happening. Right.
Right. And it's my understanding that circumcision is something that men can decide if they don't like having a foreskin. They can have it removed when they get older, if they so choose. But, you know, for me, it's like, if I have sons, I wouldn't have it done. And I don't really want to judge anybody for making decisions that I disagree with because I'm pro-freedom, but on something that is so,
doesn't mean you can't judge them.
Well, yeah. And it doesn't mean if you have a strong opinion about it, you can't, like, talk to her about it.
Just, yeah.
Or
yeah.
even just find out, judging, you know, hey, why do you want to circumcise your son? Maybe that's the best way to broach the issue is, why do you think it's a good idea to circumcise him? Or what?
You could even ask,
what do you
know,
like about it?
I don't know how confrontational you want to be.
How do you think he'll feel about it?
You could. Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
You might jump to their null hypothesis and ask them, so you say, why do you want to do this? And she says, well, because it's healthy, or whatever her reasons
are.
And
what
then you
are
could
the
say,
benefits?
Well, if I could show you that it's not healthy, would you then not do it? Because she might say, no, I'll do it anyway. Then why talk to her?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think most people, if they said, I'm doing this because I think it's healthy, and then if you said, if I could prove to you that it's not healthy, would you still do it? I think most people would say, well, yeah, I would listen to you. Right? They don't want to look like a totally dogmatic, you know, stuck in their ways person.
Now, that might go back to where Lori said earlier that some, you know, the anti say it doesn't prevent disease, and the pro say it does prevent disease. So which do you believe? Do you have any input
on
that, Rich?
We can talk about that for sure.
Well, it depends on who it is that you listen to. But see, the thing is, you have all kinds of studies that show that there's no difference or it doesn't prevent a disease, but those aren't the ones that get published. That's the problem. You got a propaganda machine that is very, very quick to publish anything that suggests that circumcision may reduce this disease or the other.
Well, that
and they've
be
been
just
at it for a long time.
It may be just a problem with science in general, is that if you get a negative result, it's not newsworthy, right? It's not really publishable. But if you get a positive result, like, oh, this is a problem or this causes that, then it's easy to get published. But if you say there's no difference or there's no correlation or no something, it's harder to get it published.
Right.
Maybe that's a problem.
The idea of cutting off any healthy tissue to prevent possible future disease is utterly absurd. We wouldn't do it to any other part of the body.
Right, because you might break your fingernail in the future, you should cut off your hand, right?
Right.
Or because you might get an ear infection, you should cut off your ear. Yeah. Like.
Or, as a matter of fact, the clitoris is more prone to disease than the vagina is more prone to disease.
Yeah, and why don't we just cut it off, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, could get some spackle and seal you up.
Yeah, that sounds good. I don't want to get any diseases. No, I think Richard brings up a really good point, which is that in recent years, probably most of the mainstream press comes from these studies that have come out saying that circumcision prevents heterosexual men from contracting HIV from female partners, which have a number of things that are kind of wrong with them for justifying the use of circumcision in the U.S. And one is that most people in the U.S., most men anyway in the U.S., don't get HIV from infected female partners. Usually they're getting it from sharing needles or sex with infected men. And circumcision in the studies does nothing to prevent against those routes. And second of all, you know, those studies are done. I totally forgot what I was going to say.
Well, let me help you out here.
Yeah.
If, in fact, statistics are important, let's not forget that the United States has the highest rate of so-called AIDS and circumcision in the industrial world.
In the industrial world, but, I mean, most of these studies are done in Africa where the HIV rates are very, very high.
Right, and see, here's the thing. You've got all these studies that are done in different parts of the world, and there are variable factors that are not taken into account.
Oh, yeah, sure, all kinds of cultural factors, and nobody really knows that much about.
And then you go to Scandinavia, and they have the lowest rate of circumcision and the lowest rate of AIDS. So what does that tell you? I mean, if statistics are important.
Right, well, correlation is not causation, right?
Right.
So those arguments are kind of dubious at best, even if, let's just say...
On either side of the argument, right?
Well, on either side, yeah. I mean, it's pretty hard to draw any conclusions from the studies that are done in Africa where the roots of HIV transmission are different. I mean, even if a circumcision did prevent men from catching HIV from an infected woman, that's not really how the majority of HIV transmission occurs in the U.S., and it doesn't say anything about other diseases. And
Here's what that means to me.
You can kind of go down the rabbit hole with this, but...
Right. Here's what that means to me. If people the world over are arguing both sides and pointing to studies, and they have statistics on their side for the pros, and then, the antis have statistics on their side, and you don't know who to believe, then why not just resort to, well, you know what? I'm not sure which is right, so I'm going to let my child decide when he's ready.
Why
I'm not going to mutilate them for not knowing.
That brings up something you said earlier, that babies can't speak for themselves. Well, they do. We just don't understand the language. But if you ever watch, and you ask about a good way to dissuade somebody from circumcising, The best way that I know of is to show them a video of the procedure being done. When you see that baby strapped to the board so that he's utterly helpless and incapable of resisting, and you hear those screams, and you see his shaking and it's just beyond belief. You just have to see it. And I'm told by nurses who've been there that it's even worse in person, much worse than just watching it on a video. And
well, I want to interrupt for a second because, you know, that might work to convince people, but I don't know if that's a good way. I mean, it's based on emotion because you could look at videos of someone going into the ER and they're screaming in pain and they're doing procedures because their shoulder's out of their socket or they've been shot or they're ripping their chest open or doing whatever they're doing. Yeah. And that's disgusting and horrifying and it looks cruel, but they're being helped and they want it done. So I don't know if the emotion is the best way to...
Well, you're talking about an emergency situation as opposed to taking...
Right. My point is, let's helpless. Consider the logic, not just the emotion.
Yeah, that argument logic, may not appeal to everyone, you know, that...
It's one tactic, sure.
The logic is that it's there for a reason. It serves multiple purposes, both sexual and non-sexual.
And the baby doesn't like it being removed, sure. And the baby doesn't like being held down either, sure.
Yeah, not
and I
could
totally understand that. I mean, one of the most often used justifications for a circumcision is that, well, we better do it when they're a baby because they won't remember the pain. Or they won't feel it, which is total nonsense, right? Because babies do feel pain, just like any human feels pain, just like animals feel pain and everything like that.
And it's only a question of how that...
Just because they can't talk doesn't mean they're not feeling pain.
And all surgeries have risks.
Yeah. And all surgeries, that's an excellent point, you know, Larry, because even if...
I was going to insert a joke in here, because if they're saying, well, the baby won't remember the pain, well, they're also not going to remember their first birthday, so why have that?
Yeah, why feed them at all? Because
they're not going to remember that.
Or why not burn cigarette... You know,
into the skin.
They're not going to remember. Why not drop kick the kid out the window? You're not going to remember.
So obviously that's a
horrible
fallacy.
Argument.
That's an obvious bad, you know, bad argument. It's easy
and
to point
fact,
that out. But
for the first 25 years of my life, I had recurring nightmares about losing a part of my body or losing a faculty, and I could actually foreign the grief of the loss. And
I miss my
foreskin. I didn't make that association. Well. And then finally when I was confronted with the reality of what had happened to me, I relived all the horror and the feeling of grief and so on and so forth. And it was just a god-awful experience. And it was accompanied by the sickening realization that this was not a dream that I was just going to wake up from. And, you know, the other thing is that sometime later, as I calmed down, I realized that I no longer had those nightmares. It was like I had made some kind of
breakthrough,
yes. Connection, yeah.
So Lori brought up a really interesting point, which is that every medical procedure has risks, right?
Yeah.
And usually when we do a medical procedure, it's because the benefits outweigh the risks, right? Yeah. So what you can do is make an analysis of the risks and benefits. And, I mean, if you're taking a sharp object and bringing it near something that somebody doesn't want to have it brought near, even if you strap them down to a board, there's always the risk that that knife is going to slip or that something's going to go wrong or there's going to get an infection or whatever. Mm. So, in my opinion, to justify something like that, the risk of a surgery going wrong, because that's what it is, it's a surgery, to justify the risk of that going wrong, there has to be some benefit that outweighs that. And as far as I know, there's really not.
Well, that,
really not.
And that might be a tough one, though.
People say it's easier to clean, but, I mean, that argument is just as fallacious as, well, it might get a disease, so we might as well...
Yeah, to clean. People don't clean it, maybe, but...
Right. Right. If you live under a rock and you have no running water, I mean, maybe, but I don't think that argument really flies. And you know, some people say, like, you know, boys will feel peer pressure to look like all the other boys. Well,
how
often are they going to be walking around looking at other boys, you know, junk? It doesn't, I mean, treasure.
Treasure.
I'm sorry.
And shouldn't we be teaching our kids to
treat others and
judge based on that?
to be comfortable in their own skin, so to speak, and not worry about what their neighbors are thinking.
Yeah. Right, well, I mean, you can extend that argument to, like, you should have the same haircut as everyone else.
That's
you should
right.
have the same color skin, and you should look exactly the same. Yeah. No, people are different, including their treasure, right?
Treasure is different. Why do I know that?
So, I mean, we've covered all these different arguments that maybe you could bring them up, or maybe you could have your sister listen to this podcast, and she could, you know, see what she thinks of it herself. Maybe that's less confrontational. But I think the real root of this issue is that a baby cannot consent to a medical procedure, and so it should not be done unless their life is in danger. And then you are making that decision for them as a proxy. But their life is not in danger
from
having a foreskin.
Maybe you could even ask your sister why she would be, if she would be opposed to not doing it until the baby could consent, that her son could consent himself. Why not do it now? Why not do it now and ask your son if he wants to have a piece of his
penis? Because you can't get it back once it's gone.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's an irreversible thing. So why not let him make that choice for himself?
I've heard people say that it's more involved to have it done later in life, but it's a lot easier to have a circumcision done later in life than to get a new foreskin.
I've heard of foreskin regrowth procedures, but it's basically just stretching skin, right? It's not regrowing nerves or anything.
Yeah, and you can find out more about that by going to NORM, that's norm.org.
Well, if they
that's
want to more advertising, they're going
to
have to
buy to charge
some
for
advertising.
That.
It's a non-profit organization. NORM stands for National Organization of Restoring Men. And the org stands for organ.
That's cool. All right. Well, do you think we have given some tactics to bring up this issue with the mother-to-be?
Yeah.
That's cool. Great.
I've got a point that needs to be made. A lot of times people will say that, well, you know, if the kid doesn't get circumcised at birth, there can be problems later with infection and so on. Here's a reality check. Most of the infections are caused by ignorance of the doctors. The doctors are not taught how to take care of the normal male genitalia. They're only taught how to cut off that foreskin as if it were on the dotted line. And what they teach parents is to retract the foreskin. That is utter nonsense. That would be like forcing your girl's vagina open to clean inside. No, you just wipe over it and let nature take care of the rest. Same with boys. You'll leave it alone. You don't try to strap them down and
this
pull
is quite,
stuff back.
Yeah, this is
quite an anatomy
quite
lesson
detailed.
To close.
All right.
We are out of time in this venue.
We are definitely out of time and we're getting out of here. So why don't we say goodbye and
thank you
guys for being on.
Thank
you. You can find us on the web if you are still listening, if you aren't horrified by all the anatomically correct.
Porktherapy.com.
And may the foreskin be with you.
Porktherapy.com, Twitter.porktherapy.com, Facebook.porktherapy.com.
That's right.
Send us questions at?
Questions@porktherapy.com. Or if you are feeling really bold and brave,
please.
And if you're still listening, you can call us at 419-PT-LOVE-4.
And record your question and we'll play it on the show and talk about it.
Now that our email is working, I think we're not going to... Mike has an email backlog of date requests that he's been getting for the last month that haven't been getting to him, so we're going to skip asking
for
for
the first time ever, my schedule tomorrow night is full.
Yes, so we're going to get going, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you guys for listening.